am not ashamed of the good news, the gospel. I am not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes. Everyone. To the Jew first and also to the Gentile. Romans chapter 1 verse 16. That lets you know that you've tuned in to a Thursday edition of Jesus Made Me Kosher. We are delighted to come to you every weekday at this same time. Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael. We invite you to look us up on the web at shema.com, S-H-E-M-A.com. Rabbi Lauren Jacobs, our senior rabbi, and myself, Rabbi Glenn Harris. We're just delighted to be able to come to you each day. And we're coming to you live today from the studios of Faith Talk 1500 and also live via Skype from the studios of Congregation Shema Yisrael. And Rabbi Lauren, what a great day and what a great subject to talk about, evidences for God's existence. I think it's wonderful that we can help our listeners to be able to grow not only in their faith, but in their ability to articulate it and defend it.
I agree, Rabbi Glenn. One of the most important responsibilities that Christians and Messianic Jews have is to engage in bold evangelism, telling a confused, lost, and dying world the good news about the salvation that the Messiah has made possible for those who come to know the three-in-one God and then transfer their loyalties to this great three-in-one God. Rabbi Glenn, evangelism is one of our core responsibilities as believers.
It is, and it, you know, it's an uphill battle. The majority of the people in our society today, we would describe as secular humanists. They don't believe in God, or they haven't even given it any thought. They don't believe that the Bible is the divinely inspired word of God. And, you know, when a person doesn't believe in God, when a person doesn't accept the Bible as true, you know, for us to just quote a verse to them is not really helpful. We need to, as you have often said, engage in pre-evangelism. We need to help those who have a secular worldview to come to the point where they're able to really consider these things, where they're able to believe in God and really believe that the Bible may, in fact, be his communication to us.
Rabbi Glenn, you know, the culture, Western civilization, has really turned its back on a biblical worldview, on the Judeo-Christian biblical heritage. And so our culture is dominated today by secular humanism, secular meaning the world, that the ultimate meaning of life is not in God, but it's in the world around us, what we can see and taste and touch and smell and feel and also in man, that what's important is the world and man, not God and heaven and the Bible. And the secular humanism really has impacted our culture. And most people today, basically, even if they say that they're Christians, they really approach reality with a secular humanistic understanding.
And, you know, it's always my prayer that people who have this worldview will come to a place of disillusionment with it. You know, what's sad to me is that people can go their whole lives, 70, 80, 90 years, and be very content to completely ignore the fact that they have an appointment with God and just kind of block all that out, fill their lives with busyness and with friends and hobbies and things and just completely crowd God out. And it's very sad to me that that's the case, but there really is an appointment that every human being is going to have with the living God. And it's important that, you know, we as believers do everything we can to be good and effective ambassadors. An ambassador has to know not only what their calling is, but has to know who their audience is and be able as much as possible to relate the truths that they bear to that audience in a way that they can understand. And so what you and I are wanting to do is to talk about arguments for God's existence, to be able to demonstrate the existence of God for those who aren't particularly looking for him, but at least are willing to hear what we have to say. And, you know, you and I were talking earlier today, and I said, you know, people want to say, well, prove that God exists. And, you know, I don't know if this ever happened to you. My dad one day just kind of cornered me, and he looked me straight in the face and say, Glenn, prove to me God. And, you know, I can no more prove God than anybody can prove anything. We in a courtroom, we don't talk about proof. In a courtroom, we talk about evidence. We talk about a preponderance of evidence, and we talk about evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. There's always going to be unreasonable people who doesn't matter what you say, but there's a reasonable doubt. And if you can provide evidence beyond that reasonable doubt, then a jury should be able to bring back a proper verdict. And so we want to talk about some of the evidence for God's existence for those who are reasonable of mind.
Yes, Rabbi Glenn. And even though I grew up in a Jewish family in the Chicago area and went to synagogue starting at a very young age, like first grade, and went all the way through my bar mitzvah and then later as a teenager for confirmation, even though I grew up in Judaism, I basically was a secular humanist. I was not sure that God existed. My parents, as I was growing up, I think could be called agnostics. They were not sure of God's existence. So I grew up in a Jewish family, outwardly Jewish as far as history and culture and tradition and heritage, but my worldview was one of secular humanism. And I spent my first 19 years of my life as a secular humanist. It was during my freshman year of college that I was exposed to these arguments or evidences for God's existence. And they really helped me come to the point where I thought it was very likely that God existed. And right around the same time, I heard the gospel, the good news being taught really for the first time. And I was able to receive the message of the Bible because I had been prepared by these arguments or evidences for God's existence. So, Rabbi Glenn, I know that these evidences, these arguments can be powerful and persuasive. And we want to present five arguments or evidences for God's existence. And I think the Faith Talk 1500 audience will find them useful to help others come to the point where they can believe in God and then be receptive to the message of the Word of God.
That, of course, is our prayer. It is our hope, and it's why we do what we do. And we're really glad you're tuned in today, folks. And if you are enjoying Jesus Made Me Kosher, tell some friends, because we really do want to be of help to people. Well, Rabbi Lauren, let's start with the first of these five arguments. Talk to us about the argument from cause and effect.
That's an important argument, Rabbi Glenn. The argument, the evidence from cause and effect, the cause is the reason that something happens, and the effect is what happens as a result of the cause. Everything has a cause. The universe exists, and the universe must have a cause. Human beings exist, and we must have a cause. Something greater than us, something greater than the universe, must be the first cause, himself uncaused. So that's the basic argument, and then let's consider the rationale behind it. The universe does exist, and the discoveries of modern science are indicating that the universe is in fact not eternal, but had a point of beginning. And the universe is not personal. The universe has no mind, no emotion, no will. Those are the essential components of personality. So, either we believe that an impersonal, non-intelligent universe always existed, or that it created itself out of nothing, and that's logically inconsistent, since by definition, it's impossible for anything to create itself out of nothing, since nothing can't produce something. Or else a personal God created the universe. Since there's mind, will, and emotion and personality in the universe in the form of human beings, doesn't it make much more sense to believe that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth? He is the cause of everything that exists, rather than something came out of nothing and the something exploded and that explosion caused increasing levels of order and personality and thought and beauty and ideas of justice.
Yeah, I was just thinking of Billy Preston. The late Billy Preston put it this way, nothing from nothing leaves nothing. But yet here we are. We have something. And the universe is not only vast, but as we look at the Earth, the complexity and the beauty and the intricacy of how everything works together. You and I have recently seen this DVD Metamorphosis about butterflies, and it's amazing, and it's very complex. And you know, I'm sitting here wearing a watch, and for me to believe that this watch was the result of some random explosion where all the gears and the hands, the glass face, the calendar date, the adjustment knob, and the band all just came together perfectly as the result of some random explosion. Come on, anybody finding a watch would say somebody built this. Somebody designed it, and then somebody engineered it and put it together. And this world is far more complex than this little watch that I'm wearing right now. It just makes sense. I mean, just at a very basic level, that someone designed, executed with infinite artistry and accuracy, this world we live in.
Well, that's true, Rabbi Glenn. And now we're discussing the second argument or evidence for God's existence, and that is intelligent design. The argument from intelligent design is similar to the argument from cause and effect. Just as we infer an intelligent designer for any product in which we discern evidence of purposeful adaptation to some end, so too the universe gives abundant evidence of purpose. The universe functions according to laws governed by precise mathematical formulas. The universe exhibits purposeful design, order, regularity, elegance, beauty, complexity, and yet simplicity. The logical conclusion is that the universe was designed, it was created by an intelligent designer, also known as God.
And, you know, even before I was a believer, I would probably say, Rabbi Lauren, that deep down, even though I argued against the whole thing, deep down, I believed that there really probably was a God. It was intuitive. And human beings, the vast majority of us, know intuitively about design and designers. Here's another. If you were walking on a path in a forest and you came across this little watch that had fallen off of my hand and saw that it was keeping accurate time, it was in working order, would you assume that it just came together spontaneously, or would you think that it came together gradually, all these gears over millions of years by chance processes? Well, no. Even something as simple as a watch gives evidence of intelligent design. You would correctly assume that a watchmaker purposely made it, and Rabbi Glenn was careless and lost it there, and hopefully you return it to me. But, you know, if a visitor from outside the universe were to visit this universe and look at the systematic way in which everything works, he would likewise correctly assume that this universe had a creator.
Exactly. We are geared to understand purposeful adaptation towards some end. If we saw the watch, we would assume that there was a watchmaker. The universe, Rabbi Glenn, is much more complicated than a watch, and so it just makes sense that something greater than a human watchmaker is behind the creation of the universe, the argument from intelligent design.
I'm still laughing because she talked about we're geared to understand. That was very good.
Unintentional.
Okay. Well, talk about some other evidence, because in terms of intelligent design, we are making more and more discoveries every year, both astronomical discoveries, paleontological discoveries, on so many levels. Talk to us about some of this other evidence, Rabbi Lauren.
Yeah, one of the great things that's been happening in our world is knowledge about creation has been exploding for the past several hundred years, and scientists have been discovering fine-tuned parameters for the universe. And if any of these parameters were just a little bit off, the universe as we know it would not exist. These parameters include the constants in equations for gravity, electromagnetism, strong and weak nuclear forces, the ratio of proton to electron mass. They've also discovered other fine-tuned parameters for life to exist on Earth. For example, the Earth's distance from the sun has to be just right, the size, the temperature, the type of the sun, the Earth's size, axial tilt, rotation speed, the moon and the size of the moon, all are necessary to make life possible on Earth, these fine-tuned parameters. Scientists are also making similar discoveries in the area of biology. In our cells, Rabbi Glenn, there are complex molecular machines and complex information systems like DNA, which are far beyond the ability of any human engineers to design. And they show tremendous evidence of design.
You know what blew my mind, Rabbi Lauren? The first time I watched a video that talked about the bacterial flagellum. I mean, that absolutely blew my mind. Could you talk a little bit about that? Because just even that one little microscopic machine, it's a microscopic machine, and it's amazing.
The bacterial flagellum is part of a bacteria. It's like a little tail, and it helps propel the bacteria so that it can move and maybe find a richer source of nutrients. But it's like very much designed like an outboard motor. It goes around and propels the bacteria forward. But Rabbi Glenn, it's able to go about 100,000 revolutions per minute. Now, our fastest race cars, I think, only go about maybe 8,000, 10,000 revolutions per minute, RPMs. This bacterial flagellum motor is able to go 100,000 revolutions per minute, and then it's able to stop within like one revolution, just come to a complete stop, and even reverse within, a very short period of time, something that no human engine could possibly do.
It's amazing. And it's got these gears. I mean, if you didn't know what you were looking at, you'd think that this came out of an automotive factory and it's some component for something, because it's got these precise gears. It's just, it's amazing, Rabbi Lauren. And, you know, it tells me things like this, both on an astronomical level and on a microscopic level, that there is just no excuse anymore for ignorance about God, because the universe, from that smallest subatomic particle to the most distant and largest galaxies, it's all screaming at us, declaring that there is compelling evidence that God exists. The psalmist put it this way: the heavens are declaring the glory of God, and their expanse is declaring the work of his hands. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night reveals knowledge. And again,
What kind of knowledge?
The knowledge that this universe and this world have a creator, a wonderful, loving, brilliant, beyond our fathoming, a brilliant creator, and that we are not here as the result of accident. We're not here as the result of random circumstance. We are here by design. And Rabbi Lauren, it tells me that we have purpose and significance in this world.
Exactly. The heavens, Rabbi Glenn, I love that from Psalm 19, written by King David almost 3,000 years ago. The heavens, the sun, the moon, the stars, the planets are telling that there's a God that exists and that he is powerful and great and glorious and magnificent. And everything about the heavens and the earth are declaring that he made it. They are the work of his hands. Day and night, God is revealing information about himself through the creation. Psalm 19, very powerful.
And Rabbi Lauren, in Romans chapter 1, Rabbi Paul also made clear that God's existence should be obvious to all human beings. He writes in Romans chapter 1, verses 19 and 20, that God has made it obvious to all human beings. He's made it plain to us. And he wrote, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power, his divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse for not believing in this one magnificent God."
Exactly. So 2,000 years ago, another Jewish man, Rabbi Paul, also used the same argument that King David did, Rabbi Glenn. This is not a new argument, the argument from intelligent design. It's a really old argument. It's obvious. It should be obvious to all human beings that there is a God, that he is eternal, he is powerful, he is divine, he is something far superior than human beings. And this is understood clearly from creation, from what has been made, everything around us. So there is no excuse for any human being to be an agnostic, an atheist, a secular humanist.
If you don't mind, Rabbi Lauren, let me return to the theme of the courtroom for a moment. You know, if I was on a jury, if I was impaneled on a jury, and we're being asked to try a case, it's a very important case, how long would I be allowed to remain on that jury if I insisted that I am not going into that courtroom, I don't want to hear the arguments, I don't want to see the evidence, I don't want to consider the merits of the case. I just want to render a verdict, just that's what I want to do, but don't bother me with the facts, don't bother me with the evidence. How long do you think I'm going to last on that jury?
Well, Rabbi Glenn, if I was the judge presiding over the choosing of the jury members, and you came into my courtroom with that attitude, I would, get you for contempt of court, and you'd sit in the slammer for a week or two.
And I would deserve it. But we have something very similar here. We have in this courtroom, as it were, the question, does God exist? How did this universe come into being? By itself or by an intelligent outside force that brought it into existence? And so what do? In a courtroom, you bring evidence to support the case you're making. And the jury is supposed to impartially look at that evidence before they render a verdict, not after the fact. It's supposed to contribute to a proper verdict so that justice is served. Well, here, folks, we've got what we would call a preponderance of evidence. Not proof, because you don't use that term proof in a courtroom. You use the term evidence or a preponderance of evidence, and evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. And a reasonable person, number one, needs to be willing to look at the evidence. Number two, there's more than sufficient evidence to know that, in fact, we can bring back a verdict. The verdict is, yes, God really does exist.
Well, Rabbi Glenn, today we've covered just two of these five arguments for God's existence. The first one, the argument from cause and effect. Everything has a cause. It just makes much more sense to believe in a personal God who's the cause of everything, himself uncaused, rather than an impersonal universe bringing itself and us into existence, those of, you know, human beings who have mind, motion, emotion, and will. And we've talked about the argument from intelligent design, an argument that King David used 3,000 years ago and Rabbi Paul used 2,000 years ago. And then there's three more evidences, and hopefully we can cover them tomorrow. The evidence from morality, ethics, conscience, belief in God, that's one. The argument from historical realities like Yeshua's resurrection and the history of Israel, and then the evidence from human happiness. So Lord willing, we can come back tomorrow and address those other important evidences.
That would be great. And Rabbi Lauren, we also want to, I really feel like we should mention to people that you are going to be participating in the Each prayer walk coming up this Saturday morning, and you and Abdu Murray are going to be together leading in prayer. Here, a Jewish man, an Arab man, coming together to show the reconciling power of the gospel. And I just felt like I wanted to let people know that you guys are going to be participating and to encourage as many of our listeners as possible to be there Saturday morning.
I'm really looking forward to praying with our brother Abdu, this wonderful Arab brother, and the hopefully tens of thousands of other wonderful Christians from all walks of life and racial backgrounds. So from all of us who are part of Congregation Shema Yisrael, we want to say shalom, shalom.
We'll see y'all tomorrow.
Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael, a community of Messianic Jews and kosher-hearted Gentiles who serve the three-in-one God of Israel. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like more information or have questions, you can also reach us by phone at 248-593-5150. That's 248-593-5150. To hear how Jesus can make you kosher, join us every weekday at 3:30 right here on Faith Talk 1500.